It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 109. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation, this first day of April. Happy April Fools to everybody. Dave, how you doing? Thanks for being with us today.
Happy Monday. Happy Pirates 4-0. Who would have thought that? I think you got to go back to 21 years ago. Is that right? 2000 and what would that be? Three, I think, was the last time they started off a season 4-0. So get the sweep of the Marlins there. That was kind of fun to watch these last 4 days happen, and obviously early in the season. But it's nice to see a Pittsburgh sports team having a little bit of success. Especially, it looks like the Penguins aren't going to make it into the playoffs in the NHL there. But I don't know if we got a ton to talk about today overall, Steelers related, but there are a few things I think worth noted. And you had your walk the mock draft the other night and had a large crowd there for that. We'll obviously have another live stream later tonight and field a bunch of questions from some folks. So where would you like to start today?
Well, let's start here a little more off topic. I want to give a shout out here. Let me make sure I have my information correct, because we shout Dave out whenever he's doing well and he gets things right. And he is on top of the world in our March Madness bracket right now. He is sitting there 800 points. What place are you in, Dave? You are up there. You're leading our Depot bracket. You're in the 97.7 percentile. So you're crushing it right now.
Yeah, sometimes it's better. Sometimes a blind squirrel finds the nut there. Just going through what you think that you know about that thing, and it's a crapshoot. That's probably the best I've ever done in a long time when it comes to brackets. But we'll see how it plays out. I have obviously UConn winning it all. No real stretch there.
Yeah, March Madness Depot coming towards you guys here in the near future with Dave's predictions. And who is in last place? Your co-host, me. I am struggling. So we are on opposite ends, and you are on the better end than I. But yeah, Dave, let's get into not a ton of Steelers news here. I do want to start here with a story that we've talked about here, and obviously kind of adjacent related to Pittsburgh. But Cam Sutton turned himself into police, it looked like, on Sunday, according to Hillsborough police, who sent out a video of Sutton turning himself in and, of course, being arrested on incident relating back to March 7th, was on the run from police, had a warrant out for his arrest, unsure of his status until Sunday. It's a domestic battery situation with strangulation, I think, are the charges. Don't know exactly things in terms of court date and when he'll enter a plea and all those kinds of matters. But Sutton has now turned himself in, so we are glad that he's safe and happy that the legal system can begin to proceed.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there, obviously, and sort of follow along loosely.
Yeah, so other news this weekend here, kind of taking it back towards more of a Pittsburgh slant. The Big 12 conference held their first ever conference-wide pro day, so it was not individual schools in the Big 12. It was one centralized location over a couple of days. We had mentioned the first day, which I believe took place on Thursday or Friday. The offensive lineman working out on Saturday. And the big name there for Pittsburgh's concern is Zach Frazier from West Virginia, coming off that broken leg. Was more limited in the process at the combine. He didn't test at the Senior Bowl, didn't participate fully because of the leg injury he suffered late in his Mountaineers career. He went through full testing at this pro day. It's hard to know because of the lack of advertising, and maybe I'm biased because I didn't I didn't like the idea to begin with in principle, but it just did not seem to be like a really well-received event where it didn't feel like there were a lot of big-name coaches and scouts there and not a lot of media attention. But we know that at least Isaac Williams, Pittsburgh's assistant O-line coach, was there for Frazier. Was there anybody else there? We're not sure, but we know at least they sent Isaac Williams for Frazier and the other linemen working out. So what are your thoughts there on Frazier this weekend? Where's draft stock could lie?
Yeah, I remain not a huge fan of these Big 12 pro days. Still trying to go through some of the footage to see if we can track somebody else from the students there. Good eye by you guys to pick out the assistant Isaac there at least we have that now noted overall there. Boy, Zach didn't have the it depends on what way you want to look at this with him. He was at the combine, at least able to do some stuff there. Of course, coming off that broken leg from late last season there. The fact that he went to the combine and had a lot of medical testing. I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers were the ones that sent him to all those different rooms and offered a medical testing. If you remember, he was the one that was hung up for quite a bit there in Indianapolis, and then was late getting, very, very late getting to his combine press conference. And we obviously had a couple of guys there to take all that in. He doesn't seem it his rehab. In other words, he should be able to be good to go, hopefully, by the time OTAs get underway. But, man, when you look at his testing overall, once again, you don't know how much time did he really have to train for these things? How much where is he at in his rehab that would have limited some of this stuff? I mean, if you look at his RAS score overall based on this, what a broad jump of 8'4", I think, a short shuttle of 4.69. The 40-yard dash, 5.24, I think, is what Dane Brugler has up overall. If you look at that at its core, and you didn't know any better, of an injury history, you would have some sense of worriment here, right?
Sure, the numbers themselves, especially in this day and age where you see linemen put up some freaky linebacker-looking numbers, it's not that impressive. But as you said, and I think that's the really important point, is that when he's coming off the injury, he probably has less time dedicated to training. Some of these guys are training basically as soon as their seasons end, and half of Frazier's process has been about simply getting healthy and working back and just getting back to kind of a relative normal for him. So there is context there. And on tape, listen, to me, he was not some sort of hyper athlete on tape where I was expecting him to wow even under the best of circumstances. So he's a guy that you really trust from a tape standpoint, technique standpoint. I get the job viewpoint as opposed to him having the best measurables or the best athletic testing.
He's not a first round center, is he?
I never viewed him as such. I had him as a round two kind of guy. I've consistently said, I think 51 is plausible outcome for him. Is there a guarantee of that happening? No, of course not. And for what it's worth, in our walk the mock draft, Zach Frazier went about five spots before we could snag him, and we kind of ran into the we're out of a center possibility and an issue. So there was a risk there, but I think from a tape and testing standpoint, I never viewed him as that first round worth a pick at 20 category.
You think there's any way he slides into the third round, or is he going to be one of those second round type guys?
Again, I've always viewed him squarely and solidly as a second round guy. We do know center slip, and had we said back in 21, would Creed Humphrey fall into the second round, you would have said, oh, there's no way that would have happened, and look what ultimately occurred. But my viewpoint is that he could be there at 51. I'd be very surprised if he was there at pick 84.
Jackson, Graham, it's between Graham Barton, if you consider Graham Barton, if your plans for him to be a center, it would be Jackson Powers Johnson and probably Graham Barton, you think, at the top of the list?
I think in terms of the most likely first-round centers, yes. Now, for whatever it's worth, there was a report from ESPN coming out that Barton is viewed as a maybe even better prospect than a Powers Johnson, and Powers Johnson may not be a top 25 pick. That's just one person's opinion. We're in lying season with the NFL draft, so we take all those things with grains of salt. But I think in terms of the you know, most realistic options if Pittsburgh were to go center in the first round, it would be a Paris Johnson. Although, again, some questions about overall athleticism with him and scheme fit with Paris Johnson. I think Barton is a really attractive candidate. I think he can make that transition back to center easily. There is more of a projection, though, because he's primarily been a left tackle.
Okay. All right. So does it feel like in round one at this point, if the Steelers go center, it would be Jackson Powers Johnson?
I mean, yeah. Again, you go back to the tea leaves of it all, and how do you want to?
Yeah. That aside. I mean, which is obviously a big component because we're talking about historically and all like that. But I mean, if they were to bucket, it feels like that would be the way, right? For a center specifically.
You do wonder, you know, because typically Arthur Smith has had smaller centers than Paris Johnson and guys that were, I think, nominally at least a bit more mobile than what Paris Johnson, I think, profiles to be. So I really do wonder about Barton because I really think he fits what the scheme is looking for. But again, I understand there is more of a projection because he has not played center essentially since his freshman year. Although I think the NFL is projecting him to go to center at his workout at his Duke Pro Day. He was primarily working and snapping as a center. So I don't know. Personally, I'm kind of leaning towards Barton. I think he can make that transition. And I think he'd be a better scheme fit in terms of you know, the wide zone offense compared to Paris Johnson.
All right. And Arthur Smith, to our knowledge, still was really the only notable at the Duke Pro Day, right? On the offensive side of football.
Was Dan Mooney Jr. at that Pro Day too?
Yeah, I think we know that he was both there and in North Carolina.
Okay, so those two guys. Yeah, so again, no Meyer because he was in Washington that day for the Huskies, two offensive linemen, and no Tomlin and Kahn, but Tomlin and Kahn were not at Oregon either. So it's, you know, Pat Meyer for Powers Johnson. It's Arthur Smith for Barton. There's interest, obviously, but we're not to the historical trends that we typically look towards.
All right. Just interesting coming out of that whole Zach Frazier. And once again, I think props to him for getting himself in a position to test at the pro day there. But I know a lot of people are going to probably be turned off just by looking at the RAS score.
Sure. But I think the context of the injury and lack of training and readiness that maybe others had should be put into context. Dave, with pro days essentially done, I know what Yale pro day is Wednesday, I believe, and there's some injury, you know, individual workouts occurring later this month. Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa and Cooper DeJean from Iowa will work out on April 8th, maybe some others as well. Lamarius Mims have a workout. Isn't he having a private workout, I think, because he had a hamstring injury from the combine?
That seems familiar.
Because he did not work out at the Georgia Pro Day, and I believe the reporting was he was going to attempt to hold his own workout once he got healthy sometime in April. I don't know if there's a date on that. And they typically don't get as much, you know, media attention than the whole, you know, official pro day, but there should be a workout for Mims.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank here when actually he's going to both will work out what April 10th. It looks like him and okay. Bowers.
Oh, right. Cause Bowers didn't work out either. Okay. So April 10th, again, we don't know how much reporting we'll get out there, but there should be some buzz considering we got two potential first round picks working out.
All right. I would assume that would be at Georgia, right?
I assume, or some location very close by.
All right. So that's 9 days from now. So we'll keep a heads out for that. That's from, who was that from? Jordan Reed reported back on the 13th that Brock Bowers and Amarius Mims will not participate in their pro day on that day, but both will have separate workout for NFL teams on April 10th. So we'll see what that's all about.
But putting all that aside, basically, our pro day tracker is almost done. We'll go back through some of the schools that we're missing someone for and see if we can just happen to find somebody, some new information, new video that's come out. But I will say, you know, Tomlin and Kahn only had four pro days that we know of, and we assume we didn't miss them anywhere because when they show up, it's easily visible and easily is reported. So that is a lower number than past years where it's typically in that seven or so range. The question is, you know, why is that? There's multiple reasons, I think. And the question becomes, would this become the year where this, you know, coach, GM, pro day attendance trend break because of the more limited number of pro days that, Tomlin and, Khan went to.
Yeah, we won't know until we know, though.
Right.
There. But it is, I mean, when's the last time? I mean, obviously, the COVID year and all like that was got cut short early on in that process there. But for them to only show up at, I mean, if they were the predictable pro days that they showed up at, you just kind of wondered if they'd be at a few, you know, as many as like six or seven, I think.
Yeah. Now, again, there are multiple reasons for that. I think the pro day schedule is terribly made and too bunched up and makes teams pick and choose. And it's one reason why there's maybe a push towards these more centralized conference pro days to try to avoid those issues, although it creates other issues in itself. But I think there's that. The league meetings, of course, is an issue as well for agency. And then when you do have a whole conference, you know, merged together the way the Big 12 is, you have fewer pro days in general. Had the West Virginia pro day been its own singular pro day, maybe you get Tomlin or Khan for that or somewhere else. So there were just fewer pro days overall to attend. So I do want to point that out. But if we go off of historical trends, our list of, you know, first round candidates is a smaller list than usual. It's going to be the Georgia guys, or really the Georgia guy and Amarius Mims. Some of the corners out there, from Nate Wiggins from Clemson, Terry and Arnold from Alabama, Cooley and McKinstry, J.C. Latham from Alabama. I mean, that's kind of your list if you work off the strict Blues Clues that has been proven true for the last 15 years.
Yeah, any Michigan guys fit the criteria there?
Not for round one. A lot of round two guys to take note of, and Sander Still, Roman Wilson, but I really don't see that round one guy. It's really McCarthy, and obviously he'll be long gone and not in, Pittsburgh's wheelhouse right now.
Right, right. All right, so we'll continue to look in at some of these other pro. Obviously, we're not going to find, I don't think we're going to find Mike Tomlin or Omar Khan, because as you stated, I mean, anytime those guys show up, it's all over Twitter and all like that. So it feels like they're done. I think the Georgia, the Georgia rewind on the 10th is worth paying attention to. But I think we have our Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan sightings for the offseason.
It appears so. And so I'll have a post on that, kind of recapping things in the next couple of days. But one interesting note, wrote an article this morning, Dave, entitled, "Where in the World is Grady Brown?" Again, going off our Pro Day tracker, which we know is not perfect. It's not absolutely complete, but it's as complete as you're going to find from any, you know, site, any coverage of any individual team. We did not see Grady Brown once on the Pro Day trail. We saw a lot of Pat Meyer, Aaron Curry, Zach Azani, a bit of Carl Dunbar. We did not see Grady Brown one time, despite this team seemingly having some pretty big needs in the secondary. What do you make of that?
I really want to go to try to search back through some of that Michigan stuff, because Michigan's kind of hard. Isn't Michigan a team, a school the last couple of years that we found guys after the fact?
It is. It happened last year, but Jim Nagy tweeted out a complete list of all the positional coaches that were there, and surprisingly, one DB coach was there, and it was not Pittsburgh.
Okay. All right.
So I don't, we'll see. And yeah, stuff comes out kind of last second, but I'm not anticipating that occurring.
This team's drafting a cornerback though, right?
I'd be shocked if they didn't, but you know, if they typically, when Pittsburgh has these, you know, positions they intend to draft, they're sending positional coaches out to about three schools. I did a study over the weekend showing Aaron Curry at three schools. What does that mean? Since we've been tracking since 2017, of the 15 instances in which a positional coach went to at least three schools, they've drafted that position 13 times. And so there's an obvious correlation there. Put the numbers to it. Not seeing Brown once. Typically, when they don't send a positional coach out anywhere, you know, you didn't see Eddie Faulkner this year. You didn't see Alfredo Roberts this year. You didn't see Denzel Martin this year. Those are positions they consider we don't really have a need at.
I feel like we've missed Grady somewhere.
Potentially. But in terms of the big schools, you know, right. Jim Nagy had been tweeting out for almost all the massive pro days, you know, the individual positional coaches who were there, and nothing on Grady Brown. Again, possible we missed something, and there's nothing in saying that they can't draft a DB just because Brown didn't attend, and they sent Mike Tomlin and Terrell Austin. Mike Taylor worked out at different pro days, I think three of them, which was a higher number than usual for him. And so they certainly were present at schools that have DB talent. But I do want to point that out, because that's one of my list of surprises from this pro day circuit.
I agree. So we'll go back through and see if we can't spot him anywhere. But like you said, probably not going to spot him at any of the big four where Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan were.
Right. So we'll go back and do our due diligence. But I do want to note that, Dave, from a pre-draft visitor standpoint, speaking of the secondary, we know at least been reported out on one additional name has a visit scheduled with Pittsburgh. That's Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. He's kind of a bigger guy, but played a lot in the slot this year. So potential slot corner and not really getting a lot of buzz, but somebody that could be a day two type of pick.
Yeah. A guy that has moved around probably translates to a slot in the NFL though, right?
Yeah. There's some size to play, I think outside and inside, but I think he was among the league leaders in the FBS last year in slot snaps. And so that's a guy that, you know, is not a Sanders still where the size is the big issue. He's actually a pretty impressive prospect overall. He's pretty physical. So that's a guy that, again, I think could be in that maybe third round possibility.
All right. I agree. So how many names do we now have confirmed on the pre-draft visit list?
Let me just double check here. Excluding the local visits, I believe it's 11 or 12. I'll go back and pull up the tracker just to get the exact number. And again, it doesn't include the Pitt guys that reportedly, you know, coming in. Let me just pull up the tracker. We are sitting at, I think, 12, again, excluding local visits.
All right. So hopefully we will be able to build that out a lot fuller here over the course of the next couple weeks, because we're still a little less than 4 weeks away. And we know that pro draft visits usually happen a good chunk of them after the pro day circuit ends.
Sure, sure. If you had to guess right now, it's a big question, ton of variables, but what position do you think Pittsburgh will target in the first round as things stand today?
It feels like tackle, and it feels like we've said Amarius Mims feels like the leader in the clubhouse at this point. But it really feels like tackle, and you know, the wide you can make you if you get away from the Tomlin and Khan portion of being at, you know, pro days, you would probably think wide receiver would rank up there, but man, tackle seems to be where it's at. Mims specifically, as we've said, it's hard to get away, especially when you see, you know, when you think about the center position and how that normally gets pushed down. Man, it feels like it's got tackle written all over it.
It does in a lot of ways. If it was receiver, I wonder who that name would be. Because you would have thought, I would have said Brian Thomas Jr., but when you don't see, you know, Zach Azani at that pro day, you don't see a heavy presence at LSU overall. Andy Weidel was there, but no OC, no positional coach. You wonder, okay, if it's not him, is it one of the Texas guys and A.D. Mitchell?
Yeah, if there's any guy to buck, it feels like to buck the, as far as the wide receiver position goes, to buck the Tomlin Khan at their pro day, it certainly would feel like maybe Mitchell might be the leader there.
You just wonder, is there almost a potential of a frustration with him because he looks huge, he can play big, but he can seemingly have these highs and lows in his game. Right. Not always played it to, I think, his physical talents. And Pittsburgh has had some of those frustrations with guys not playing sure up to their talent all the time over the last several seasons.
I would agree.
But, you know, if you go the question and kind of the conundrum, though, and we kind of walked this out in our walk the mock draft after that is to say all, but it was a cool exercise, is that in our walk the mock, for those who didn't listen, spoilers, if you want to go back and watch, fast forward the next couple minutes in this conversation. But we took Amarius Mims in the first round, very conventional, you know, moved Broderick Jones over to left tackle, good pick overall. My goal was to go get a center in the second round. The centers had been falling. No center had been taken until number 26 overall with Powers Johnson. Thought, okay, I can get Grant Barton. I can get Zach Frazier. Tried to trade up, could not trade up. Frazier was gone. Barton was gone. And if that happens, you sit there and go, okay, who the heck is our center for 2024? So putting my exercise aside, if Pittsburgh bypasses center in round one, they're at risk of the board breaking poorly for them ahead of 51. And it goes back to the question of, okay, if you lose out on a Frazier, a Barton, a Powers Johnson, who in the world is your center for week one in 2024?
Yeah, that's a great question. And It's going to be the fact that they have not addressed that position still at this point. Now, they did say a couple of weeks ago, Khan did, that, you know, can't rule out trading. But who are you even going to – I went through the list of centers around the league right now under contract to see who would you even trade for. And, man, it's not that appetizing.
What was the best name of apparently a bad bunch that would make some level of sense?
Oh, let me look back here real quick. I mean, there was just nothing. I'm going to have to look at the contracts table again and pull this back up.
I think someone mentioned a Ricky Stromberg from what up there in Washington. I don't know what the feasibility of that is, but that's one name that's been, I think, kicked around a time or two. Just speculation, not reporting. Just, I think, us, even our own Discord chat, kind of talking a little bit.
And wasn't he just a draft pick a year ago?
Yeah, they signed Biadasz though, right? And so that's, I guess, is kind of the rationale of why they may move on, or theoretically may move on. But it's hard to find good offensive linemen, and the ones that are out there aren't cheap. Teams want to keep them. They want to hold on to those priority premier positions and keep their depth as opposed to giving it away for a day three draft pick.
I mean, obviously, you're not going to go out and you wouldn't think they would go out and trade for somebody with a high, you know, salary, right?
I mean, if they couldn't get a starter, then I guess there's nothing that really prevents them from doing that, aside from just general, you know, salary cap ramifications, right? But they would have the space to do that. So if hypothetically you go to the draft and you get nothing, you know, why would you not go target somebody then, I guess, from a higher contract?
You know, and then there is who is the injured Dolphins center that everybody's waiting on? Is that Connor?
Connor Williams, yes.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it feels like he's got a lot of rehab to go, you know, still on him.
Right. Like, is he ready for spring ball? Doesn't sound like it. So you're behind. Is he even ready for training camp? You're not sure of. And so if he's your guy, you really don't know how quickly you can get him into this new offense with a new quarterback. It's a lot of new that you're kind of waiting on.
I mean, when you go through this list, Alex, of centers and, you know, ones that you could think have had the potential of being traded, I mean, it's yuck.
Any names at all you could just even throw out there? Is there anybody that you've even said that's not good, but it's a plausible thought?
What about Drew Dahlman?
From Atlanta, from the Arthur Smith connection. Right. Yeah, I don't know what they have behind. They lost Tennessee to Philadelphia, but that's a guy that obviously the Falcons were high on.
What about the Notre Dame kid that went to the Buccaneers and played some guard?
Oh, Hainsey.
Yeah, Hainsey.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, if Tampa Bay, wasn't Hainsey starting for them last year?
Seems like it.
Or was he kind of injury replacement? I don't know in terms of the depth chart for them and what they've all added. Was he playing true center too for them too? Or was he playing more guard? I don't know what he was doing for them last year.
I'm going to have to look at that.
They had some injuries. Was it Ryan Jensen had gotten hurt? And so I think that pushed Hainsey into action his rookie year.
Last year, Hainsey logged well over 1,000 snaps, 1,200 snaps at center.
Okay. I mean, is he their starter though? If he's their starter, right, then I don't think they're going to give him up.
Right. But I'm reaching
sure
here.
Sure. You know? No, understood. But I think it highlights the concern. Okay, Pittsburgh does not go center in round one, then you better get a center in round two. And the concern overall, as we're kind of dancing around, is Pittsburgh is putting themselves into this box of, we have to either take a center in the first round, and that's got to be our guy, or we got to do something maybe desperate in the second round to trade up or find a way to not lose out on these top three or four options at center.
Surely they don't view Herbig as a break. I mean, they do, obviously.
They do.
I mean, as a break glass. Okay. You just, man, he doesn't have the snaps there, you know, and you would have, if you come out, in other words, if you don't trade for one and you don't come out of the draft for one, then when you get into OTAs, man, you got to start getting him a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, he basically becomes a full-time center as opposed to a guard. He'll be in the mix. I think I'm confident he'll take center reps in camp. I just, as a starter, if that's your plan, I mean, that's a really poorly thought out plan in an offseason where you've had plenty of time to consider your alternatives. I mean, they released Mason Cole weeks ahead of free agency. And if that's your best option, what you come up with, he's done a really poor job of managing an important and critical position.
Yeah, you almost wonder if they get past the draft and all like that, and things don't get better, Mason Cole might be invited back, you know?
Yeah, you can't rule that out. Just like Patrick Peterson, I think in the secondary, if you don't get a slot corner, is in a similar bucket. But again, you know, if that's your plan, you've had a really poor plan.
All right. Well, hopefully this thing will get a little bit more clarity here in the next 3 weeks before the draft when it comes to the center position, them doing at least something there. But it is going to be interesting to watch, how far the center position, you know, Graham Barton's going to be one of the more intriguing talks, I think, moving forward here ahead of the draft.
Sure. A question of exactly where does he play and where does he go are kind of your questions. There were some comparisons to a Peter Skoronski last year, a bit undersized college left tackle. Skoronski still went 11th overall, kicked inside to play left guard. Barton, again, I think has been getting looked at center more than he has been guard overall. But you do wonder, is that a sleeper name at 20? My point, I guess I'm trying to make is if Pittsburgh passes on center in round one, then I think you really have to make a move up in round two to go get a guy, whether that's Frazier or Barton or somebody that slips, whoever the case is. I think trying to just sit there and wait and hope the board comes to you at 51 is a really dicey proposition, just because if it doesn't work out your way, you're in a really tough spot.
Yep, I would agree.
So that'll be one of the most intriguing things. If it's not center in round one, what does this team do on round two? If that requires trading more draft capital, then maybe so be it. But you also have a bunch of other draft needs to fill. And if you're trading away more capital to do that, that's one less pick you have to fill a need at slot corner, receiver, D-line, etc. So again, a lot of layers to this onion.
Real quick, reviewing the Graham Barton snaps last year at Duke, left tackle was where he predominantly played 492 snaps. What did he miss games with? Do you remember?
I can check. I don't remember for sure, but
2022, mostly left tackle, 825 snaps there. 2021 for Barton, mainly left tackle again, 747 snaps there. And then 2020, center, 430 snaps in 6 games.
Yeah, again, really played center his freshman year and moved to left tackle and played there the rest of the way. I don't know exactly on Barton. He missed the end of the year, couldn't participate in the Senior Bowl because of an injury. I'm not seeing exactly what that injury was, but there was something late in the season that hindered him throughout, you know, November, December, January.
Okay. All right. Yeah, look, I mean, we've all been concerned about the center position for some time now, you know.
Sure. Looks like lower body. We're getting the hockey term. I'm reading one article here on Barton, but he worked out at his pro day, obviously. So I think health is, you know, he's in a good place right now.
All right,
Dave, you did some studies over the weekend on Justin Fields, on Russell Wilson, doing some of the contextualization on them. Just kind of walk through what you were looking at, why you were looking at it, and what the conclusions were.
Hey, first and foremost, I pulled those because we're messing with a new stats program right now. I wanted to see what I could pull on it and was looking to see if I could get time to throw type stats in there along with to get it to show things like air yard distance and just playing around with that. And I had already immediately after the Steelers had signed Russell Wilson, I had went through all of Twitter and pulled up all of his touchdown throws from last season. And I had done the same with Justin Fields as well, too. So I had all those Twitter TV links ready and just fooling around with some stuff. I figured I wanted to see how some of that stuff tabled up on the site. So the reader was the winner here because I wanted to see how that stuff would format. And it's been a while since I'd done some of this play-by-play contextualization. I figured, you know, it's a long off season. We're going to be looking deeper into guys like Russell Wilson and Justin Fields and stuff. So I said, why not start with the touchdown passes that each threw last season? So I did a post on each of those and played with the format a little bit to get it show up on mobile. So that was a prime thing, A, to, you know, I already had easy to deliver content there up on the site that I think people would get a kick out of there. And once again, pulled some deeper data in there. I think when you look at those plays, just in general as a whole, I think the thing that sticks out more than anything when it comes to, what was it, 26 touchdown passes for Wilson, I think 16 for Justin Fields. I think the thing that sticks out to most people there is a lot of them were, quite a few for both of them were extended play type situations. That's first and foremost, I think the thing that stuck out for me, specifically with Russell Wilson, and specifically, I think him moving over to his right side, there. So, look, we have not had the opportunity to watch a lot of red zone passing touchdowns, the last couple of seasons. So that in and of itself, I think was a treat. I think the other thing that stuck out, and it wasn't high volume with both these guys there, but there were some long down the field touchdown throws, you know, both of these guys, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, still have the arm strength there. Justin Fields particularly has got the arm strength. So that was another thing that stuck out. A couple of those were in more in structure type plays. So I thought that was significant when it came to there. The time to throws, you know, I think we've talked about that with both these guys is, and look, this is just low – you know, these contextualizations were just limited to touchdown throws. So it's not a huge, you know, subsection there that we're playing with there, but you know, the time to throws overall were elongated. And that's something that we've known with both these guys overall, is they tend to hold on to the football a little bit, overall, there. But I think those were the main, takeaways there. I think it is exciting in the fact that, look, I mean, you would like to see as much in structure stuff as possible, right? And those are when you look at these two quarterbacks overall and talk about how they're fitting in Arthur Smith and trying to get away from the high sack totals and all, you do hope to see both these quarterbacks, whichever one starts and predominantly plays, be able to play more in structure. But it was fun to see scoring take place specifically inside the red zone when out of structure things happen.
Sure. There's an asset to their mobility, you know, Fields in his prime, Wilson can still move some, although his legs, not what they used to be. There is going to be this really interesting line to walk between, you know, allowing those guys to do what comes natural to them and lean on their mobility and trait to extend the play and produce as your study kind of walk through, but also, you know, again, Fields had the longest snap to throw time last year of over 3 seconds. Wilson was the third longest at right at 3 seconds exactly. You can't have that happen again in 2024, at least not without the negative consequences of pressures and sacks that come along with that. So how can you walk this line between allowing those guys to play free and play like themselves and the players they've been throughout their entire careers, but also mitigate that and play a bit more in structure and get the ball out quicker. I know Fields has worked on his release some. I've seen some videos of that, and he's kind of been doing that, I think, throughout the offseason. But trying to balance those things will be one of the most important things that, you know, Mike Tomlin, Arthur Smith, Tom Arth will be working on this year.
Yeah, look, and that's what we said right after, you know, specifically after Wilson was signed. And then, you know, once the Justin Fields addition happened, there is the onus is going to be on this coaching staff and this offense in general. We feel this is going to be a run first offense. It's no secret there. They're going to lean heavily on the run game, but being able to build off of that, the onus is going to be on the coaching staff to get either one of these quarterbacks, both of them, in general during the offseason, to play more in structure, in rhythm, those sort of things. So, I mean, it's all going to come down to scheme and coaching. But within that, though, as we've said, especially with an older guy like Russell Wilson. I mean, to some degree, you hope to take the boy out of the trailer park, but you're not going to be able to completely take the trailer park out of the boy, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So you've just got to limit those negative plays, specifically those sacks, the high volume of sacks. And then, Russell Wilson's had some turnovers when trying to hold on to the football and extend plays as well, too. And you've got to severely decrease those things as part of him being in your offense now.
Sure, I agree. But the question is, how do you do that without also making, because what happened, I think, in Chicago, either last year or 2 years ago, you heard the comment from Fields that kind of went semi-viral of it. He felt robotic in Luke Getsy's offense, not able to kind of play like he was comfortable and used to playing. And, again, you want to reduce those negative plays and outcomes, but you also want those guys to do what they've done and what kind of comes natural to them. And whenever it works in really exciting and productive outcomes in terms of yards and points and touchdowns. So I don't know what the best way to balance that will be. It'll probably be some trial and error and kind of working through it continually throughout the season.
Well, I think when you go back to that that coaching clinic on Arthur Smith, things that we've already highlighted already, both these guys have shown that they can do play action. So obviously if you're having a good run game, you would hope to see more under center stuff, more play action to be kind of on rhythm, suck those linebackers up, maybe work the middle of the field a little bit more than both those quarterbacks have been used to in most recent times there. And then the play pass element that we talk about there. Can you get these quarterbacks in some half field type situations and some levels type stuff? Make the reads, make it all fluid with them where it's play pass, get them on the move, half field it, levels, make the reads real simple for them, get the ball out quick that way.
Yeah, I think it's a good plan. And these guys will have to adjust too. There's going to be an adjustment from the coaching side and an adjustment required from the player side to buy in and to tweak their game and evolve their game. Because for Wilson, he's older. He can't run like he used to. And for Fields, if he wants to truly become the elite player that he's flashed and has the potential to become, he has to eliminate the fumbles, the interceptions, the mistakes, the sacks. And if he can't do that, he's going to be just viewed as this what-if kind of quarterback.
Look, I don't want to paint what I did with this contextualization as anything worth sharing. I did just to look at the touchdowns overall, but that's really the first time I think, at least I have gone through every one because you obviously have to chart some of that stuff and make sure it matches up as well too. But I mean, there were some impressive touchdown plays there, and once again, you go back the last couple of years, we have not seen a lot of touchdowns, specifically red zone passing touchdowns from this team, and you are going to have more of them now, which is a positive with this offense moving forward in 2024. I mean, there are going to be red zone touchdown passes from this offense, something we have not seen a lot of the last couple of years. Now, once again, what happens between the 20s is going to be really, really significant for this offense, especially when it comes to the negative play aspect.
Yeah, no, well said overall. So excited for it, but just trying to rein in some of the negativity with Fields and Wilson. If you can cut that down to a more normal range of outcomes, then you're good to go, and you should be a much better offense because of it.
Probably look at interceptions next for both of them. Play around with that.
How many picks did Fields throw last year? He threw more than Wilson. Wilson had 8 last year. I wonder what I forget the number on Justin Fields. 9, so 8 and 9 respectively.
Right. So won't be long post, won't be hard to pull together. I should be able to find all the clips easily.
All right, good deal. All right, Dave, what else do we have here today? Again, a quieter show overall. I've gone through some of. Go ahead. You were gonna say something?
Explain your walk the mock more thoroughly, real quick.
Yeah, just annual thing that we do in conjunction with the people at Walk the Mock website, where you can do live mock drafts with other GMs and people. Not sponsored, but they've always given me the opportunity, so I appreciate that. So.
I haven't had a chance to go through. I would check in here and there on it all. Were there any computer picks in there, do you think? Did everybody show up?
To my knowledge, everyone showed up. I can't say that, I guess, 100% with certainty, but I think everybody, they had a human sign up for every single team, and I think everybody was there. I didn't see any computer picking or anything like that.
All right. What seemed to be the most surprising thing in those two rounds from from a non-Steeler standpoint.
Drake May went first overall over Caleb Williams to Chicago, so that was surprising. There were a lot of trades, which was interesting to do because we only did a 2-round mock draft because 3 rounds at 2 minutes per pick would take forever, would take 4 hours to do. And so the creators only wanted to do a 2-round mock draft, but there were more trades, which is kind of tough to do when you're trading like a 3rd-round pick that means nothing for the purpose of the mock because you don't actually get to draft in the 3rd round. I don't know if there was any one surprise that in the sense of didn't expect it besides the Williams thing, but there were some interesting trends of, I think 9 of the first 10 picks were on offense in this top 10 of this mock draft. And that's probably reflective of how things will go in the real thing later this month. It's an offensive heavy draft. You saw a lot of runs at receiver early. I think in the mid to late first round, at one point there was a run on wide receiver where 4 straight receivers went off the board and somebody traded up to go get one of those final top receivers. I think it was Keon Coleman from Florida State. So you saw a big run there. The centers fell. The first center did not go, and I call centers as Barton, Powers Johnson, and Frazier. Powers Johnson was the first center off the board at 26 at Tampa Bay. Again, we took Pittsburgh did Amarius Mims at pick number 20, and then Barton went, I think, early second round, and then Zach Frazier went to the Raiders at 44 or 45 right ahead of us. I tried to trade up and could not. So you saw the centers fall, but then they went pretty quickly from about 26 to 45. And did so the, that's a trend.
Did the team that draft what team drafted Barton?
I do not remember. I forget. Did the Ravens? The Ravens actually.
Oh, okay, so they would probably obviously with
Linderbaum there. Yeah,
yeah, with Linderbaum there, that makes you think they viewed him as a tackle then.
I guess, yeah. It felt very classic Ravens where they took all of the players I wanted to take. Like, it was very real, true to life there. It was interesting. Yeah, I think Baltimore actually ended up taking Barton despite not having a need at center.
Interesting.
So, overall, it was fun. But, yeah, we took Amarius Mims in the first round and then Malachi Corley in the second round, the receiver from Western Kentucky. So, we were offense heavy in the 2 rounds that we drafted.
All right, are they going to be doing another one or no?
Not official. I told the stream we'll do one more and hopefully because you can do them whenever with different people and there are always kind of different rooms you can go in and enter like a fantasy football draft. And so we'll do one more and do a 3-round mock draft because without the whole totality of round one and rounds 2 and 3, you kind of don't get to see the whole picture of how your draft looks. And so I'll do one more stream before the draft with to hopefully feature the first 3 rounds to get our 2 3rd-round picks in there too.
All right, let's see. What else we got to talk about here?
I'm watching some draft guys. And for this week for the site, I told our crew last night, it's going to be small school week. We're looking at small schoolers this week and kind of focusing on some of the guys that don't get talked about as much. And so you're going to see some smaller, you know, below FBS level type of prospects, FCS. I got watching Willie Drew last night from Virginia State and seeing him. Interesting prospect. I think he's got some talent. So we'll have that on the site this week. I was watching some other guys as well. 2 guys that I profiled over the weekend. Actually, one went up today, but Brandon Coleman from TCU viewed as this mid-round, you know, tackle guard. I think if you put him at guard, Dave, he's going to be a you know, high-level starter. I put a second-round grade on Brandon Coleman if you kick him inside the guard. He's big, he's strong, he's long, he's physical, he's got finish and aggression, he's got experience. And so that's a guy that has not gotten talked about a lot in a really deep offensive line class overall, but I think he's got great value in the mid rounds if you kick him inside from left tackle to left guard.
All right, it'd be fun to learn about some of these smaller school kids this week then.
Yeah, I'm looking at I was going deep down the rabbit hole. We got Colorado School of Mines coming up. They got a receiver. We got a New Haven receiver. I found New Haven tape. You know how hard it is to find New Haven tape? Not on YouTube. It ain't there, but I found it, just random holes in the wall. So we'll have a bunch of those profiles from the whole team here later this week.
All right. Did you watch any of the UFL games?
I did not. I know that Brad Wing had the craziest play in the world, a touchdown pass to the center. Is that what it was? I mean, take me through that play. Maybe you probably saw it more than I did.
I just, you know, in fact, I think Wing said they'd never completed that in all the times that practice. Kind of a wacky play, but he got to show off his arm a little bit. It was good yak by the center. I think he caught it, at the, I don't know, 12-yard line or something like that. Look, I didn't spend a lot, you know, in between basketball games, and obviously that was on, and, you know, it, that, you don't have to twist my arm very much to watch any kind of football and all like that. But the thing and the little bit that did stick out of me in the partial pieces and parts of games that I did watch is the quarterback play looked a lot better overall. I mean, yeah, Matt Corral out there looked pretty sharp on some of his throws and all like that. And a guy that we obviously both studied a little bit, you know, a couple years ago ahead of that draft and all like that. I don't know if this spring league is going to make it and all like that, but I think they've done good to now trim down the teams because I think as a whole, the talent base is better overall. Mm-hmm. Deion Kane still making plays, nice. former Steelers wide receiver. Anthony McFarland had a pretty good game for San Antonio and all like that. But just something to fill the time viewership wise there.
Sure. Yeah. Quarterback play is always the tricky part with these spring leagues because it's hard to find good quarterback play consistently for the 32 NFL teams, let alone for a spring league, you know, group. And so if you don't have good quarterback play, it just kind of makes for unwatchable television overall. So encouraging to hear that there was some, you know, impressive moments from the collective group there. Yeah. McFarland had the first touchdown for San Antonio, a little catch and a little flare out in the right flat and showed off his speed. So if he has a good spring, then maybe he catches on somewhere in the summer in a training camp.
Yeah, I have a feeling he'll probably end up on a roster in training camp somewhere.
Yeah, so good for him, and hopefully his success continues. Any prospects, going back to the draft, anyone that you're watching, Dave, or anybody that you want to hear more about or hope to learn more about?
Just going to fly through some of these tackles and centers a little bit deeper, I think, and start looking at more of those position groups and all.
One other guy that I profiled this weekend, Andre Sam from LSU. And Dave, I was watching his tape from he's a free safety. And I was like, this guy's a really good player. Like, why am I not hearing any buzz about this guy? Because he's a little undersized, but he can tackle. He's got some range. He's got good production. The issue, though, as I came to find out doing some more digging into his bio, is that he spent 7 years in college. He's 25 years old, and he's about 5'10", 195 with average athletic testing. And so I was like, okay, that's why he's not being talked about some. But a really interesting story was a walk-on at McNeese State, spent 5 years there, 1 year at Marshall in 2022, transferred to LSU in 2023. Good tape. He's physical, fills the alley. Like, he has some ball skills, good instincts, but you're 25, about to turn 26. That makes you a day three kind of guy. But interesting story, guy that you root for, and I would not be mad at him as a day three guy. Ike Taylor worked him out at that LSU pro day. So one day three name I do want to mention, because there's some talent there. Just the age concern is obviously a factor.
All right. One interesting note here. I don't know if there's much to read into it yet. The Steelers and obviously the NFL transaction sheet, they have yet to show the official signings of Quez Watkins, Allen, the quarterback. Who was it? Dean Lowry. And who was
Patterson
and Patterson. So none of those moves are technically not that there's any concern here, but it's weird that it's taken this long. Maybe it'll happen 5 minutes after we get off the podcast when they officially announce the signings and all like that. So we're still waiting on the official contract details on those four players overall, because they haven't technically even been made official yet.
Okay. But the last cap update you did had those guys earmarked for assumed contracts, correct?
Yeah. I've got all those guys as minimum benefit, veteran benefit contracts and all like that. But, you know, if you want to look at it from a technical standpoint, this team still has, you know, a little bit, what I have, 14.9 million in salary cap space there. So they'll have obviously couple million less than that after these signings officially take place. According to a big day a couple of days for me, because the NFLPA public salary cap report finally shifted over to 2024, and that's significant because it allows us junior capologists to officially try to balance where each team is in, you know, related to what it's hard to explain, because it's not real time. Because as we just mentioned there, you know, there's four outstanding contracts for the Steelers at this point. But you're able to work backwards through it and get yourself into real time of where that number actually is. And that the NFLPA public salary cap report number is now caught up to the Van Jefferson signing for the Steelers. So it's always a trying time for me because I want to make sure I match and I balance per se. And I was able to do that. And another interesting thing about it, this is the second year in a row. Every year, teams have to account for a workout bonus placeholder amount, that the NFL puts in there saying, okay, well, you're going to have to, earmark at least this amount of money for workout offseason workout, bonus placeholder amounts. Well, last year, they never even, I don't think they even instituted that number in there. And then if it officially didn't hit until they actually had the true offseason. Anyway, that they have yet to put into the official numbers to work out bonus placeholder amount number. So I find that quite curious. Maybe they're not doing that anymore about holding teams to putting that number into place. I mean, we're talking less than $1 million, but anyway, they're not accounting for the workout bonus placeholder amount yet in on the sheet. So just something. Okay. Just so something that really concerns me, I guess.
Yeah. You know? You're talking to a party of one, but no, we love it. We love the nerdiness for sure. I promise you there's somebody out there who's interested and happy that you shared that information. So you're not balanced yet because of everything that has to update still. Is that kind of what you're waiting for your equilibrium?
I mean, I am balanced as far as where they're at in the time frame, which is through the Van Jefferson signing. So yes, I do balance. Now we're waiting for those four outstanding contracts to hit, which Davis, they're not even official yet, according to the Steelers or the NFL transaction sheet.
Right. It's not been officially announced or processed or anything like that yet. But you are floating as you're doing this podcast. You're levitating in the air right now. Is that accurate?
That would be correct. So,
All right. We are looking into how Dave does this, how he pulls off this dark magic with the cap here. But appreciate all the information. And yeah, once those things become official, we'll check our balance. But I think what you're saying for the minimum contracts for Allen and Lowry, et cetera, should be accurate. I'd be surprised if it was anything more than that.
Yeah, the only thing, you know, did all of them receive $167,500, you know, which is the max signing bonus to go along with it. I'll be surprised if any of them aren't. I mean, not that it's impossible, but I would be surprised if they're not veteran benefit contracts based on the player's history and the Steelers' history and those kind of things. If I am off, I'm not going to be off by much because you can't envision any of those guys signing for a huge amount of money.
Right. And for the veteran benefit, how common is it for somebody to get less than the maximum signing bonus? Is that a relatively a common occurrence, or do they typically end up signing for the max?
Last year we saw LaRaven Clark get $50,000, you know?
Okay. So you do see some play there.
Yeah. Just a note there that the max to qualify for a veteran benefit contract and just rewind real quick. The advantages of that, it's got to be a player with four more credited seasons. You sign him. He's got to have the minimum base salary. And then the maximum signing bonus you can give those players is $167,500. And the actual benefit to that is the player's base salary only counts as a player with two credited seasons, not four. So, yeah, you're paying out the cash to the player, but you get the cap benefit related to that. So, once again, we saw last year you had a guy like LaRaven Clark that you got to take advantage of the veteran benefit contract of him having only, and look, he didn't even last, you know, he didn't even make the roster at all, but as far as offseason goes there, the thing to watch really when it comes to these things is the amount of the signing bonus.
Understood. Do you expect any more free agent moves before the draft? I know it's always possible, always impossible.
Yes. Predict. They got to get a center, and they got to get a in some way, shape, or form. It feels like they got to get a center and another wide receiver. You know,
you target though at this point. I think the names are off the board. I think you've gotten your kind of backup and depth guys, but you go draft somebody, get a starter.
I don't know. I think Michael Gallup's a name that's being thrown around out there. You know,
Yeah, I mean, that's just idle speculation. Yeah. It's not reporting, right? It's just some guy just saying. It's like, what does a Gallup do for? Is he going to be your starter? I mean, I don't think so. Is he going to be a backup and special teamer? I mean,
well, look, as far as guys that you're going to bring in right now that could get significant playing time and you could lock in maybe into, you know, that list is dwindled. I mean, you're back down to what, a Tyler Boyd for the most part, you know.
Who's more of a slot guy, and you've signed Watkins, who's more of a slot guy.
Right. It doesn't sound like anything concrete's going to happen there. And then obviously until Brandon Ayuk does sign a contract with the 49ers, people are going to continue to try to speculate there, I think. But once again, until there's more embers to any of that flame based on things to come out of the owners' meetings and all like that, doesn't sound like anything's going to happen there.
And then when it comes to center, yeah, it's certainly possible. And I thought it would have happened by now, to be honest with you. But maybe that is a post-draft thing where you just, you know, some of these, because at some point, these free agents sit there and say, I'm going to wait till after the draft and just see what happens there and wait until I know exactly how rosters look instead of assigning for a team 2 days before the draft and they go draft a center in the first round and the roster complexion looks different. So if you're a veteran, I think even Patrick Peterson talked about that. Like, I'm going to wait until post-draft and just kind of see where things stand to make the best decision, the most informed decision as possible, instead of kind of doing it before the draft, because financially things aren't going to change that much. And so I'll just kind of, you know, wait it out.
I am. And I said this the other day on the podcast, I am a little surprised that they haven't spent a little bit more in cash right now as a team. I mean, even backing it up from, you know, the day after the Super Bowl and on, if you look back historically to last year, now look, you've had a lot of movement. You've freed up a lot of cash this offseason, right? I mean, even going back prior to the technical start of the new league year in the middle of March, this team trimmed a lot of cash, right? Okorafor, Mason Cole, who else did they cut? Patrick Peterson, technically, I think was
Allen Robinson.
Allen Robinson. I mean, things that you knew had a good chance to happen. That was still technically cash that was set to be on the books that wasn't guaranteed that you've trimmed off. And, you know, if you go back to the year previously, the only real main cut from the Super Bowl on to the start of the new league year was William Jackson III. Once again, you're talking about a move that you knew was going to happen. But even so, and even with all those kind of expected moves prior to the start of the new league year this year, I kind of thought that they would have spent a little bit more cash along the way between now, since the start of the new league year and now.
Sure. I get that. And who knows? Maybe they tried with some prospect and free agent and lost out on him. Who knows?
Yeah. I can't help but keep rolling back and thinking that they thought maybe Mitch Morse was going to be a slam dunk early in this thing, you know, a street free agent and all like that. I kind of wonder if did they make a mistake there not getting him locked up, you know?
What was the contract he signed? It was a 2-year deal. $7 million per year.
Maybe he read the writing on the wall too, you know, saying, yeah, I see what's going on here. I'm going to be a 1 year and done type player here. What was his contract?
Two years.
$10.5 million with the Jaguars, with $7 million being fully guaranteed. $4 million of that was a signing bonus. He was not likely to get that from the Steelers. Let's see. What else did they do? $4 million.
Some void years, it looks like. They had some void years on the contract.
Who was it? The Jaguars did. They had three void years on there to help with the signing bonus program. On that, he had obviously some per game roster bonuses built in, workout bonus in there. They fully guaranteed his 2024 salary of $1.5 million, and it looks like $1.5 million of his 2025 base salary was even fully guaranteed if over the cap numbers are correct there. So the fact that he got $7 million fully guaranteed, he was not going to get $7 million fully guaranteed from the Steelers.
Yeah, I understood why they passed on him, because their intention is to draft a center, you know, and they wanted probably someone a bit lower level or cheaper to justify him potentially becoming a backup. But obviously, I think they've not done well to find somebody at center and really have kind of put themselves in a corner going into the draft.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I obviously with his age, and they probably thought they'd get him in that door early there and didn't realize there maybe be another team or two out there with a higher priority on him.
Yeah. I just thought they could sell, you know, come here, win, you know, keep winning and go from Buffalo where you've won and come to Pittsburgh and have a chance to compete here and be a leader. And maybe that just wasn't as attractive to Mitch Morse.
And obviously from the moment he left town and started a new league year, went into effect and all like that, the centers really started rolling off and the market ended up being pretty decent for centers this offseason and all. So it's interesting. Look, We'll judge this thing after the fact. I mean, let's get through the draft, through the rest of the free agency, see how it looks and all. But without a doubt, center is a gaping hole on this roster right now.
Yeah, and again, they can fill that easily. You know, they could go draft a center in round one, and there's your guy, and you clap your hands and you hope that guy works, of course. But you filled that void there. But it does come at a cost at other positions that this team will have to ignore to draft a center within their top two picks.
All right, shall we get to We've run out of things here to talk about, I think.
Yeah, let's get some reader emails and close out today's show. Reminder, we have a live stream tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern time, so we have a chance for more questions and answers later tonight.
All right, Tyler Armis writes in, looking at the recent clips that Najee has released to him, training has him looking a bit slimmer. Thoughts on him dropping some weight similar to that of Le'Veon Bell, but later in his career? I know he doesn't have the same burst, but I can't decide if I want him to stay as a big bruiser or maybe drop some weight and mix in the dancing around that we all hate him doing. I find myself wishing he would lay the boom a bit more sometimes. Thank you for all you guys do. Here we go. I did see those clips. I posted them from his Instagram on Twitter and all like that. It's dangerous when you look at these guys out of pads, but he does look a little bit slimmer, I think, just at first blush.
Yeah, this happened, I think, after his rookie year, right? And somebody asked, did you lose weight? And he was like, what? No, I'm the same way that I was before. So I don't know. I don't know his process. Maybe he's slimmer in April and he starts bulking back up as we get closer towards spring ball and training camp. I don't know for sure. But he's obviously working hard. And if he wants to lose a little weight, then, you know, I'm good with that because I think he wants to probably produce some more explosive plays. That's why Bell dropped weight. James Conner dropped weight. And so it's a typical process. A lot of bigger running backs go through. So I don't want to speculate. You're not in pads. It's different. Usually you're used to seeing him all, you know, suited up, obviously. So I don't know for sure, but he looks good. He's working hard. So I'm happy.
Yeah. I mean, it looks to be in fine shape. And, you know, if he has dropped a little bit of weight, maybe that'll help. If they run more outside zone, maybe him get out there and turn it up and get a few more explosive plays that way. Look, and I've said this about him since Najee came out. You know, obviously the explosive plays, the percentage wasn't there in college, and normally you see that stuff kind of carry over to the NFL. I thought he did a really good job of producing the explosive plays that he produced last season. So that was a nice surprise overall. Now, is that kind of going to be his ceiling? Right now, what we saw as far as explosive plays last year, look, if he can duplicate what he had in explosive runs last year, but still have the key thing that you want to see with these running backs overall is where are the 6, 7, 8, 9 yard run plays at, you know?
Sure. And Harris, I think, is very good at that. You saw fewer negative runs last year, benefiting from the offensive line improving, of course. I mean, again, the crazy stat is that Harris was, what, fourth or fifth in the NFL in runs of 20 plus yards last year, but his longest run was 25 yards. And right. So it was very confined to that, you know, small area of 20 to 25. Can you find a way to get, you know, 30 plus? And again, that's based on other factors. It's based on receiver blocking and, you know, tight end blocking and those types of things as well to help you turn those good runs to become great runs. It's not just on the running back, but, you know, if Harris feels like he wants to gain some burst, extra speed in the open field, there's a obvious benefit to that.
All right, Billy Key writes in, hey guys, love the podcast and the site. Literally check it 20 times a day this time of year for Steelers updates. I was wondering how to submit questions for Alex's mailbag. Billy, I think Alex does that every Thursday on the site. At what time do you usually have that?
It is 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. So that is live typically. And so you can come on 2:30 around there Thursday, put a comment in the post and I'll answer it. If you can't do it live, if you want to send me, you know, preferably on Twitter. If you want to at me and send a question, hopefully I'll see it. If I do, I'll answer it there too. But typically the way it works is once it goes up on the site, I'll answer the questions that appear in the comment section on that post. So try to do it live and post around then, and I'll go ahead and answer it. That's the best way to try for me to see it and for you to reach me.
And Billy, I don't know if you're going to hear this in time, but every other Monday evening at 7 Eastern time on Alex's YouTube channel, we do a live stream Q&A with listeners. So we invite you. I don't know if you have time to check that out, but that's also an option to get some questions answered that way. Let's see. I think we have got through everything that we need to get through in the email machine here. All right.
So we'll come back on Wednesday. I should have my next and newest mock draft by at least the Wednesday show, either for Tuesday or Wednesday. So we'll have, if nothing else, that to discuss.
Yeah, we're in that little bit of that lull area right now, coming out of the bulk of free agency and pro days. So feel free to get those questions. Now's a perfect time to load up on the Terrible Podcast questions and all like that. Once again, we'll be back at it again tonight for the live stream. And then the next scheduled podcast will be on Wednesday. Let's see. You can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right. Navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button up right. Navigational bar and follow the directions that way. If here's something real quick. If you sign up for the ad-free version, you have to create yourself a username and a password, and you have to log in to the site, and there's a login up top there. You have to be logged in to take advantage of the ad-free version. I think sometimes people sign up and they think all they do is they sign up and pay the money that way, and they get the ad-free version. You have to be a logged-in user, paid user on the site to be able to take advantage of the ad-free version there. So sorry for not making that clear enough over the years. But if you're having issues and you've paid, look, send me an email to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you've signed up and you say, I'm not getting the ad-free version, send me an email. Let's look at what's going on there. So until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.